Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mundus.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio. This is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Go. 612 on 9/11. Goodbye, more on that later. It's, I guess, in a weird way, a good distraction. Florida could have been much worse. It's plenty bad. And they're not out of the woods yet with the storm that's covered the entire state and will now affect other states. As Hurricane Irma has battered Daytona Beach overnight and created record flooding in Jacksonville. The flooding to follow is the biggest concern. We'll get into all of that as well. A couple of friends of ours rode out the storm in interesting ways. Roger German, who now runs the Tampa Aquarium, which I've not been to the Tampa Aquarium, but I think it's like it's a couple of fish bowls and a couple of goldfish.
It's a wonderful, wonderful aquarium.
World-class aquarium. Mm-hmm. And Tampa, of course, was under the gun. After the hurricane, as one forecaster put it, was playing games with us. Mm-hmm. Switched paths and looked like it was headed for a direct hit in Tampa. It then veered northeast and has slammed Daytona Beach and Jacksonville, amongst other places. Georgia's not out of the woods. Alabama's not out of the woods. Tennessee's not out of the woods, as a tropical storm will continue north. And all the associated problems with it. One of the things that struck me over the weekend, and it made sense, was there was nobody talking about Houston. And Houston was a week ago.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to do some follow-up on Houston as well, because they're still dealing with everything that they have to deal with, including in a rising death total.
Kind of an aside, too, did you see there was a story in the New York Times over the weekend? There was a couple named Harvey and Irma, and they've been married for 75 years.
Well, not anymore.
No, they're still married.
No, it's over.
But it was an interesting,
it's too,
you know,
much
of
a rock and roll kind of thing. It's
lighthearted
over for them.
Side piece.
Dr. Most will be on. We'll get to the top six in a second. Roger German says he'll be on here in just a few minutes. Stuart Chiron, the cruise guy, rode out the hurricane in Miami, which got blasted. But the big question this morning is the Florida Keys. You can't see the Keys until the sun comes up. Communication cut off for most of it. And the question is, a part of the United States accessible only by bridges, is it accessible this morning? And how much damage was there? A lot to do on the program, as you can tell. But before we get to any of it, let's get to the top six at six.
From the Steve Cochran Auditorium in the lovely Sunrise Hotel, it's time to get your kicks.
Get your kicks.
With the top six at six. Sponsored by American Weathermakers, the home of the 60-Minute Man.
Bad football weekend, huh, Dave?
Yes, it was, Steve.
What was the number? Final on Saturday?
41-17.
41-17, Duke won. Did not expect that.
Nope.
Northwestern will recover.
Yes,
they will. Much like you would expect them to. They're too good not to. And the Bears were better than expected, but this ain't Little League. Got to get it done.
Yeah, you have to get wins.
You have an opportunity to get wins at the end of a game, you got to step up and you got to get the win.
And I think they realized that, and hopefully in that situation next. Did you?
Yeah, I wanted to drop them a note. I said, when you have an opportunity to win, and then I had to change pens because that pen was out of ink.
Right.
I said, you have to deliver.
Those are words of wisdom.
Did everybody have baby oil on their hands at the end of that game?
By the way.
My God, not one person could catch anything.
I brought you that from Soldier Field yesterday.
A white towel? Is that, the surrender towel?
No, and here. Oh. AD, I brought these for you.
Oh, bear down.
Oh, cool. I got a
bear down. You got
Mike. These are awesome.
That's Mike Ditka sunglasses.
Mike Ditka sunglasses.
With the mustache.
Complete with the stash.
Yes.
These are awesome. Thanks, Dave.
Sure.
Was it Mike Ditka mustache sunglasses day?
Yeah, apparently. But he was on the field.
I'm going to wear these all day.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yes. Bears have Tampa Bay this week, and that game should now go ahead as planned since Tampa Bay escaped the wrath of most of the trouble. There was some question about location previous to that. All right, top 6 at 6. Hurricane Irma is expected to remain a hurricane strength Category 1 storm at least through the morning. And looting has been reported. There is trouble in a lot of places. But there is reason to be happy this morning because it literally could have been much worse. Next. One of the things we haven't talked much about at all, the strongest earthquake in a century in Mexico has left at least 90 dead. You can also expect that number to rise. That death toll comes from an earthquake that measured 8+ on the Richter scale. Then there's this. Today is the 16th anniversary of the 9/11 terrorist attacks. Every year, it becomes more of what you would expect it to become, and that is a historical point and more of a distant memory. But for those of us who were functional adults at that point, it's always right there. Mm. I mean, right there. You can remember where you were. You can remember what you were doing. You can remember how you felt and the role you played for your family, for your loved ones. And in our case, to inform the public.
Yeah, absolutely. I think everybody, especially all of us, every time we talk about it, every year, you just get a little teary-eyed.
Well,
I
yeah,
do.
Yeah, and you see the documentary work that's done, and you go back instantly to what happened to those firemen that were on the street when the first plane went in. And the film by, was it the Gallaudet brothers, the Gallaudet brothers? I can't remember their last name, but these are the guys that actually happened to be shooting a fire department documentary who ended up traveling with one of the fire department crews into the World Trade Center towers. And you actually saw footage of firemen on the last day of their lives.
Right.
They run in while others run out. And the amazing story is, and this doesn't get mentioned nearly enough, since 9/11, there have certainly been problems, and there have been domestic terrorist attacks, and there have been terrorist attacks that emanated in other countries that have killed Americans. But there have literally been thousands of terrorist attacks and plans for terrorist attacks that have been stopped by the security people that protect us.
Yeah.
Next. Before Donald Trump became Donald Trump Republican, he switched party affiliations not one, not two, not three, not four, but 5 different times. Steve Bannon, the former White House strategist, told 60 Minutes he would continue to be Mr. Trump's wingman. Mm. But he called the president's firing of James Comey, the former FBI director, the biggest mistake in modern political history. He is a blowhard of exceptional level once he talks. He doesn't talk much, but when he does talk, you're going, man, that guy needs to shut up.
Mm-hmm.
And if you saw the 60 Minutes piece last night, you heard what he had to say. If you didn't, we'll play some audio of that this morning. Meanwhile, Senator John McCain told Jake Tapper yesterday morning on CNN of his fight with cancer, I'm facing a challenge, but I've faced other challenges. Oh, like 5 years as a prisoner of war in Vietnam?
Mm-hmm.
He didn't say that. I said that. That's just to remind you of what McCain had been through. He said, I'm very confident about getting through this one as well. He is 81 years old. He is alert. He is tested. He is ready. And he will continue the fight. He said something else that was kind of I don't know, just profound and interesting in terms of the fact that the guy's facing his end. He said, look, we all got to die of something. Yeah. And then Jake Tapper added, which, you know, it's the right thing to say, but I don't know, it struck me as odd when he said it. He said, well, I hope this isn't our last interview. And, yeah, I would hope that, John McCain's been in here more than once, and I hope we'll see him again here. The senator is 81 in fighting, and we need him now probably more than ever. And then there's this. I'm going to be honest with you. I didn't know the Miss America pageant was on last night. Didn't see it, didn't follow it. And apparently I missed Miss North Dakota, Kara Mund, named the new Miss America last night. Has there ever been a Miss North Dakota, Miss America?
There has not. This is the first time in competition history that there has been a Miss North Dakota.
Why do you doubt it?
I don't know.
Why do you doubt it? Why do you don't think there's beautiful, talented women in North Dakota?
I don't know. I just never heard of a Miss North Dakota becoming Miss. It was so funny. I turned it on for 5 minutes last night.
What where channel
where
was
it?
It was on
Sci-Fi 2?
I think it was. No, it was on a
Stars?
Main channel. I think
really?
It was 7. Yeah.
I didn't. see it.
And it was hilarious because they still do the talent competition. Remember what a big deal
it used to be?
Oh, yeah. They still.
In the three-channel universe, you'd watch this every year.
Okay. They still have the evening wear, the fitness, the lifestyle, and the talent categories.
So they were dancing to Last Dance by Donna Summer. I go, what is this, the 70s? I couldn't believe it.
Not good.
It was hilarious.
North Dakota's Kara Munn talent was she roped a steer? Did you know
global
that?
Global warming was her.
Oh,
platform.
I thought she roped it.
Climate change.
I don't know what her talent was.
You know what? She probably could have, and
she would have done a fine job.
Yeah, I wouldn't even know.
Top six brought to you by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men. How do you ride out the storm if you think it's coming to you on a direct hit? How about on a ship? I don't know how much of this I can even talk about. I don't even know if Roger got clearance for this. Find out for me, Sandberg, if you would, when we come back and talk to Roger German about he and his family expecting Tampa to be hit yesterday. Oh, and by the way, his parents were visiting in town as well.
He had in his cabinet, too.
I don't know this.
Oh, you got it. I'll tell you.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
We know that we are ground zero for Hurricane Irma. We have, for 90 years, avoided this day. But I think our day has come. You know, Mike Tyson once said, and I never thought I'd be quoting Mike Tyson, everybody has a plan until they get punched in the face. Well, we're about to get punched in the face. The good thing is we have trained for this. We have prepared for this. We are ready for this.
Bob Buckhorn became a star yesterday. He was on several of the cable channels, a lot on CNN. And I like him. Any guy that brings out a Tyson quote in the middle of a storm coming at him.
Right.
Our friend from many, many, many years helped build the Shedd Aquarium into a world-class facility and has gone off to run the Tampa Bay Aquarium, another world-class facility, which we know that he's on the way to making the best in the world. So you go to Tampa, you move there, Roger German, you move there, I'm thinking, what, 2 months ago?
Me, Steve, it's good to hear your voice.
Hi, buddy.
And the family actually came down on July 30th.
So they come down, they're there, you know, 6 weeks. Tampa hasn't had a storm like this in 90 years. Your parents come in to visit, and it happens this weekend. Nice timing, buddy.
Well, you know, I've had a few colleagues look at me and wonder, what in the world? I mean, we heard this guy kind of has a hurricane-type personality, but what in the world happened? And I said, look, if you get 5 inches of snow in Tampa, you can blame me. Otherwise, I have nothing to do with it other than hunkering down, and we're going to get through it.
All right, now, people who rode this out, because, you know, you could easily make the argument that Senator Rubio made in Miami. Where did you expect me to go? The storm was covering the entire state, because there's some criticism at Rubio State in Miami. The storm was covering the entire state. There were people who left Miami to go to Naples. Naples got slammed. There were people that left to go to the far eastern part of the state. Look what's happening in Jacksonville this morning and in Daytona Beach. So you decided to ride it out in Tampa Bay. Now, can you tell us what you did? I don't know if you ever got clearance on that.
Yeah, you know, I did. And to that point, let me just say, as someone now, when you're down here, a couple of things that we were always hoping for, that the folks, especially back up north and back home, didn't have that. They had more anxiety than many of the folks down here had. But you channel that. But like with a hurricane, as you mentioned, this hurricane moved all over the place. It's really, really hard to figure out. And quite frankly, you know, with my wife and two kids and, you know, even this time with my family, trying to figure out how to get up an expressway and, you know, make sure there's gas and I don't run out of gas on I-75 was less of an option than sitting in my house with boarded windows. So I can see how folks down here make those, you know, tough decisions and everybody wants to be safe. But that being said, I happen to have a unique position for this, my first hurricane, on a really cool, one of the world's finest, coolest icebreakers called the Avik, which means walrus in Inuit. So I was in the port, hunkered down up 7 stories high on the bridge and watched Irma come in and out. And now daylight happens and we're going to assess any damage that happened.
All right. Now, here's the thing. A couple of obvious questions. Why is there an icebreaker ported in Tampa?
You know, this is the port here in Tampa is one of the top ports in the world.
Right.
And believe it or not, it's up here kind of getting serviced, and we happen to have some access to it. And very appreciative of the port to let me and my family come over here. It also gives me greater access to the Florida Aquarium when I'll head there in a few minutes just to assess any damage that may have happened over there.
And here's the thing, too, that you got to remember, because it also serves oil spills in the Gulf. you know, with raging seas and swells and waves like you wouldn't normally have. I would guess the ballast system on this particular icebreaker is pretty incredible, right? You probably weren't rocking and rolling all that much.
Oh, my goodness, Steve. These guys up here who run through the Antarctica and the Arctic, they were sitting there just kind of just playing cards and hanging out. They had no clue. I mean, they're rated for 250-mile-an-hour winds here. You're exactly right. Even as high as I was and the winds were swirling, only got up to about 60 knots from what I can tell at the height of the wind gauge. But, yeah, I mean, you just didn't feel anything here. You just watched the rain. It was a really unique view because, again, I can see the downtown. I could see the light staying on. You know, when something would happen, like a transformer would blow, we could see that. But just kind of had a piece about it because you just kind of knew what was happening around you and kind of knew a little bit of your destiny, if anything. But this was as safe as can be.
At least the great views follow you, Raj, because you had the best office view when you were at the shed overlooking the skyline. And Now it's kind of like you're storm chasing, watching this view.
He doesn't want to do any more of that anymore.
From Irma. Raj, tell the story about what you put on. Was that you or your wife when you were on Facebook and she said to do the grocery shopping? And what found its way into your cabinets?
Oh, that was me giving some credit. So it was the difference between men and women, right? So I took a photo of our cabinet with all the non-perishables, and the cabinet had things like Spam and Hamburger Helper and cans of tuna, and,
mac and cheese
shells, and let's just say my wife would never normally buy that on any given day, but since she went to the grocery store, that's what she picked up. So it takes a Category 5. For my wife to get some of those kind of good food products.
I think we can all learn from a storm like this and that Spam really is the only thing you can survive on going forward. In some cases, well, that might be a reason to give up.
I was going to say, Steve, the good news is that we didn't get hit as hard as we probably could have here in Tampa. So my assumption is that the local food pantries may be loaded with a little more Spam than they're used to.
Because your kids are always your kids. Your kids must think you're the coolest dad ever because this had to be some kind of great adventure for the two little ones to be on this boat, right?
You know, it really did. It was an amazing adventure for them. They'll be able to talk about it, their very first hurricane on a icebreaker. But the main thing is, like you say, they're always your kids. They're safe and sound, and they've slept through the night.
The other part of that, your kids always being your kids, your mom and dad were with you. What role do they play in this?
You know, it's interesting. It really worked out well because, as you said, you know, I started June 5th, went back and forth, but really the family has been living here, you know, only for the last, you know, 5-6 weeks. I believe everything has a reason and a purpose, and my folks were extremely helpful being here to whether it was, you know, helping with the kids or helping, you know, fill a sandbag. You know, they were great and allowed me to, you know, be the leader I needed to be, not only at home but also at the aquarium. So it was very, very special and comforting to have them here.
All right, so let's talk about your aquarium for a second here before we let you go and get back to work. You got to go over and check it out. The beautiful Tampa Aquarium is situated where in Tampa?
Yeah, so the Florida Aquarium is sitting right on the harbor at the top of the port. So we have great views, you know, 363 days a year, you know, when you don't have a hurricane. So the biggest thing for us, obviously, the winds went through. We were prepared for that. The biggest thing for us is to now watch what happens with the storm surge that comes on the backside. But all indications, and that's the great vantage point I have, is that the surge hasn't been as high as we've seen in the past. So the reality of it is I hope to get over, expect to get over to the aquarium and it all be in really good shape because we had her buttoned down and ready to go for a major Category 4 hurricane.
And I assume it's a lot of glass windows and things of that nature. So it was a good thing that the wind was less.
Yeah, absolutely. And the city did a great job. You know, you talked about Mayor Buckhorn a little bit earlier. I'll tell you, I had the pleasure of meeting him and talking with him. Reminds me a lot of Mayor Daley. And, you know, he just had this city hunkered down with great quotes, but also the city emergency responders. They knew what they were doing here. So even for a first-time guy like me, I felt very comforted. And I feel when I walk over to the aquarium, we'll have found out that our friends and colleagues tied everything down and we won't have much damage at all.
It's the new CEO of the Florida Aquarium in Tampa. Put it on your must-see list when you're traveling, and you'll soon be traveling back to Florida soon, as we all should. Tourism runs the state. It's Roger German. God bless you, buddy. I'm glad you guys are all okay.
Yeah, thank you for all the prayers and wishes. It's great to hear your voice, and Andrea's as well.
You too, Raj.
See you, but it's Roger German, one of the great people on the planet.
Mm-hmm. Great family. Great guy.
But how cool is it, Dave, as a dad, to look at your two little kids and go, guess what we're going to do?
Oh, yeah.
We're going on a ship. Yeah. We're going on a big boat.
Kids are going, no.
I bet they loved it.
Yeah.
I bet.
I have edema on my thigh, pink stuff in my eye, and I need you now. I've got a stomach pain that's low, fungus on my toe, and I need you now. He's from Central DuPage Hospital. Call Dr. Most right now.
Dr. Kevin Most joins us. Good morning, sir. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. How about yourself?
Well, you know, I'm feeling a little better about Florida this morning. Could have been a lot worse, even though we've still got flooding concerns to come.
Yeah, down to Category 1. So you're still looking at some big impact. A lot of hospitals closed and states pretty much empty. So,
and with all your close ties to North Carolina, it looks like North Carolina could be under the gun for some tropical nasty weather.
Yeah, they'll get a little bit of rain, but I'll tell you that what could have happened going up the east instead of the west is, and it dying out is really good for all the people there.
So we'll keep an eye on the flooding thing as the day goes on. Let's talk about doctor shortages for a second, yeah. Speaking of closed hospitals. We've talked about this a little bit in the past, but estimates continue to change, and unfortunately they're not going up. They continue to go down.
They really are. And, you know, you start to look at life expectancy going up, and we're going to have to need more doctors. And unfortunately, it's not like you can say, oh, well, let's just add 5 chairs to each class, and this way we're going to have more doctors, because it really is based on the clinical exposure, not so much the, you know, the sitting in the classroom stuff. So we're definitely in a world of hurt coming up here. And unfortunately, the big impact, Steve, is going to be in primary care. Everyone's going into specialties, and primary care, the lowest paid physicians. And believe me, we're not going to stand out and, you know, take donuts and tag days for doctors, but still the lowest paid. And that's where our concern is.
Well, and by modern definitions, if you think people get into medicine to get rich, think again, kids. There has never been worse reimbursement from insurance companies. It's been primary care physicians. I believe, Doc, correct me if I'm wrong, get affected more often than not on this. Obviously, there's great expenses to be a specialist as well. But it seems that less people are drawn to become doctors now, and that's why the physician's assistant situation, and nurse practitioners, those folks are really in demand.
They really are. And, you know, I talked to a friend of mine who had seen a doctor, who had gone into the emergency room, and he said, you know what? I went to the emergency room. I saw an advanced practice nurse, an APN, great caregivers. We're really going to need them. He said, then I went to the specialist office, and I saw a physician assistant, and now I'm going to see the doctor. So we really are going to need those mid-level providers to help us get over this shortage that we have. And so it's not unusual for people to go to a doctor's office now for routine follow-ups and not actually even see a doctor. They're seeing an APN or a PA that's going to help us at least get over this.
So why is medicine less of a draw than it used to be? Why aren't there a bunch of kids going, I'm going to be a doctor, I'm going to be a GP, I'm going to go to college somewhere, I'm going to go back to my small town, and I'm going to be the guy?
Yeah, you know, I think there's a couple things. One is the amount of time it takes. So you think about most people, you know, you go through 4 years of college and you're like, okay, I'm in debt already and I want to go out and start working. So for medical school, you have an additional 4 years of medical school alone. And then on top of that, anywhere from 3 to 15 years of residency where you're still not even out there practicing, you're still training. So you come out with a big debt and you're doing this. And then a lot of people also have a look at the lifestyle and say, do I really want to be on call at night? Do I really want to be working weekends? So, you know, the people that go into it, it's kind of like Michael Jordan. You go into it for the love of the game. You go into it because that's your calling. You don't go into it because you think you're going to make any money.
So if you go to your 4 years of undergrad, you then go to 4 years of medical school, and then you do residency. So realistically, how old are you before you start in private practice?
Well, you know, it is, Stephen. I'll tell you, I had friends that finished medical school, finished undergrad, started working, you know, and here I am a resident making, back then it was probably about $18,000. So at least you get a little bit of money. But, you know, so you finish undergrad and you're 22,
And so you're really close to 30, some people probably even closer to 35 by the time they even start working, I'll say.
And then, of course, you've got to go back and pay the bills off.
You do. You have to go back and pay off your debt, and I'll tell you that's a little bit painful. For myself, it was, and you know, we'll talk a little bit about the Evans Scholars here in a minute. I was fortunate to have my undergrad paid for. One thing that I would say to people right now, there is a bill in Congress called the Teaching Health Center Graduate Medical Education Bill, and it's one where we fund, I shouldn't say we, the federal government funds some primary care doctors to go into underserved areas and to go into rural areas and do their residency in these areas. I was fortunate. I did my residency at Lutheran General. But now what we're looking at is how do we get doctors in these areas? We've talked about areas in the urban areas where, you know, there's no grocery stores. Well, I assure you there's no doctors in those areas as well. And this plan is one that is going to lose its funding at the end of this month if we don't continue it. And these are the important caregivers that we're training them in this these urban underserved areas. And many of them are going to stay there because that was their calling. So we're really concerned about that portion of residencies where we're getting those kids, getting those young doctors in an area where it's underserved.
I think it's like the Teach America program, right, where you incentivize teachers to teach in areas that it's tough to get teachers. You're incentivizing doctors to do the same.
Exactly, because you think about it. Most doctors, when they finish their residency, are going to stay within a close area of where they trained. And in this group, these are people that say, you know what, I want to go serve in the underserved area. So let's let them train there because two things happen. One, we get great doctors in those areas, and two, they want to be there. And if this funding goes away, you're going to see all those slots being, again, pulled out to suburban or other large teaching institutions, and you're going to have areas in the community where you're not going to get good primary care, and now you're going to have, like we've talked before, pay me early, pay me late. Those hypertensive diabetics who are not getting treated in that area are now going to end up in your emergency rooms.
Call your congressman or congresswoman and ask them to support the Teaching Health Center Graduate Medical Education Program because only Congress can make a title so difficult it's hard to remember. Teaching Health Center Graduate Medical Education Program. I would like to tell you if those initials add up to something that makes it easier to remember, but just call your congressperson and say, hey, you know that bill that's keeping doctors in areas that don't have doctors? I want you to support that. That'll cover it.
That's exactly it.
All right, stand by. I want to talk to Doc about the Evans Scholars. He's doing something pretty cool today, and he is an Evans Scholar, and he wouldn't have been able to be a doctor without the Evans Scholars. Stand by for that. Dr. Kevin Most, sponsored by Northwestern Medicine, making people better by making medicine better. And you are where today?
I am fortunate to be up at Conway Farms, where the BMW Championship is going on, and playing in the Evans Scholar Cup this morning. So really looking forward to a great day here.
I remember a time when you were my caddy.
Yes, it wasn't that long ago, actually, was it?
Well, this is great because this is former Evans Scholars like yourself and a day dedicated to raise even more money for the cause of the Evans Foundation, which does what?
You know, and it is. And I got to be honest with you, playing today, I'm playing with, you know, our good friend Larry Ryan, who is an Evans Scholar from University of Illinois, Jimmy Riley, who's an Evans Scholar from University of Illinois as well, Alex Mendez, our pro, and then Joey DeBono from Tofano. So we're going to have a great day.
Well, that's going to be fun. And I understand your caddy is your brother?
Yeah, Brad's caddying for me.
That's excellent.
Tofano's one of my favorite restaurants ever.
And Brad's one of your favorite Most.
One of my favorite Most ever.
All right, so after
Kevin.
Explain what the Scholars do.
Okay. So the Evans Scholarship, and thanks, you know, to BMW and FedEx for the support of this, as well as the people that are going to come up here. But the Evans Scholarship is a scholarship for caddies. And for all of you parents out there who have an 11 or 12-year-old and trying to figure out what you want to do with them, get them into caddying. Not that, you know, I need the Evans Scholarship, but I'm telling you, it's just a great job. But the Evans Scholarship, we have almost 1,000 Evans Scholars right now in college. And it's a 4-year scholarship. They're at 20 different universities around the country. And I'll tell you, they handpick these kids. And I've been very fortunate. My brother was very fortunate. 95% of Evans Scholars finish in 4 years. grade point average? About 3.3. So you're taking these kids, you're putting them in a great university setting, and you're allowing them to learn, and they become great citizens as well. I mean, they just do a great job.
And it's a club for life because you pay it forward as you guys are today by going out and raising more money for kids that are coming up now.
It is, and I can tell you it's so interesting when you you meet somebody who's another scholar. You know, that we just call ourselves scholars. We don't even say Evan Scholar. Oh, you're a scholar. Because then you go back and, where did you caddy? And it is. It's this club. And I can tell you the support of the golfers that pay money for the par club, the people that are going to come up here to Conway, you're making a huge impact on your community and the future going forward of these young great students who are going to go on and become doctors and lawyers and business people. So I can't thank the Evans Scholarship enough. We were very fortunate. My brother and I, two of the four of us that caddied, got scholarships.
Yeah, it's amazing.
I mean, my dad sold sporting goods at Sears, and my mom sold dresses at Carson's. There's no way they could afford all of us, all five of us, to go to college.
Yeah, and the day today, again, is just part of what happens this week because the BMW throughout the week, proceeds from it raised will go back to the Evans Scholars as well. And the Western Golf Association manages all of that, and we thank those guys.
Yeah, I'm sitting actually in Vince's office right now, Steve, so if you'd like me to...
Why don't you go through his desk, see if he's got any Pro V1s that he can part with.
You need a good stapler.
Well, I can tell you there's 70 people, and if I added you to the list and gave you a tee time, they'd never know. I mean, 70, 71,
Well, that's the thing. I was planning on bringing out my clubs Thursday morning and just saying, hey, does anybody want to go out as a 3 or a 5?
Yeah.
I don't know if they're playing for some.
Cochran, I think I'm playing with, Casey and Spieth.
Yeah, Casey, Spieth, and Cochran. Which one's on the red tees?
Yeah.
Hey, play well today. Have fun.
I will. And again, thanks to Western Golf, thanks to BMW, FedEx. You're making a big impact, and can't say enough for the Evans Scholars Program.
And follow the links at BMWChampionship.com. Just Google the BMW Championship, and you'll go from there. Thank you, Doc.
You got it. Talk to you soon.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
Here we go. Game on the line right now. Leonard looking in trouble. He sacks, and that's it. The Falcons will hold.
A tough way to lose. Ran the ball really well, and then in the fourth quarter had to start throwing it, and we were able to move the ball. Definitely tough to come up a few yards short.
Whether it's playoffs, Super Bowl, regular season, you got to win your close games. And like I said, that was a pretty good opponent we were matched up with as far as, I know offensively probably one of the more explosive offenses in the league. I don't know what their record is being held to 23, but I don't think it's great.
Regardless of how this season works out, you're going to look back and say, oh, we should have had that one. It's the NFL, kids. It ain't Little League. You get four chances to win it. You got to win it. Sure, lots of improvement. Lots of things to feel good about yesterday. But, man, that one left a bad taste in my mouth. How about you, Hamp?
Well, exactly. We, I hate to say it, here we go again. There's no consolation prizes. There's no ribbons. Hey, you got a chance to win it. You've got first and goal at the 5. Make a play. But from start to finish, you got to give the actual team. I mean, the team fought and played hard. The fans were fantastic. At the end of the last season, there was 20,000-30,000 no-shows. For the fans to come out, to feel the true vibe of enthusiasm off this team. I mean, it was everything, the table was set, and unfortunately, you can say what you want, but, we couldn't make it happen. And, we can bust it all down, but the bottom line was anyone that watched that game, my wife, who knows very little about football, said, why wasn't that little fast guy in at the end? And, I mean, that's what...
That sums it up.
Right there. If you're a great putter and you've got a 6-foot putt at the end, you don't go changing putters. You make the putt. Use the weapon that brought you to this point. And just like everyone else, we're highly disappointed. I think I predicted 31-20, something like that. So, the defense, except for the one blown play,
they really played pretty well. They had to stop the run, make them one-dimensional, stop Julio. A lot of the checks in the boxes were there. We just didn't get the big one, the big W. We didn't check that box.
Sponsored by Chevy Drive, Chicago.com, the Hall of Famer, Hamp, breaking down the Bears, Dave.
The big play that you alluded to, Hamp, the 88-yard touchdown pass to Austin Hooper, and the Bears are blaming it on a lack of communication, some confusion on the play that left Hooper wide open. When that sort of thing happens, not that specific play, when that kind of thing happens, is that something that you feel they can address pretty quickly here in terms of making sure they get the right calls or making sure if they don't know what's going on that there's a timeout taken there?
Well, obviously, to be honest, as a defense, the offense is proactive, defense is reactive. You don't know what they're going to do, so you don't know exactly how you're going to play until the ball's snapped, and then you have to react. And if you're not completely sure, if you're not on the same page, if you're not playing the same defense, you know, there was a single high, cover one, and normally we play cover two, blah, blah, blah. Well, you know, Quentin Demps, was critically flawed two different times. You know, if he's single high, he can't jump. And Julio Jones, I think, is maybe the best player in the game today. I mean, he's unbelievable. And we had basically shut him down, and you can't let their best player beat you. So he kind of, at the snap of the ball, and once the play started developing, he basically tried to jump the route and help. I think it was Cal Fuller on Julio. And as soon as he did that, he vacates the middle of the field. The linebackers looked like they were playing an underneath zone when apparently with a single high, a lot of times you've got to, you know, certain guys are playing man with some stuff freed up underneath. Well, ultimately, somebody turned him loose, and Quentin Demps didn't realize that he had him if he was turned loose. So it was a blown play. Now, in my 12 years of playing, we only had maybe a handful, you know, the entire – because we practiced a lot and we played a lot in the preseason. But the I guess the end game is, you know, it's pretty obvious. If you make one mistake, you know, the guys used to say, hey, you know, you can be right 999 times, but if you're wrong one time, that's the one everybody's going to remember. Well, that was the play. Now, what do they do from here moving forward? Obviously, everyone realizes the importance of one being on, you know, the same page, same call. But number two, hopefully it'll put a big sense of urgency in not only the guys, you know, pre-snap, but through the week of practice to not ever let this happen again. You know, Cos and I always used to say, hey, every game has, you know, every play is the winning and losing play. You just don't know which one it is. You just got to play them all. And, well, yesterday in a 6-point game, a blown call for a touchdown, you know, it's the difference.
The little fast guy. Let's identify him by name, and what a surprise he turned out to be.
I don't know. And I hate to say it, but they've seen this kid now through 6 weeks of training camp, and I'm having a hard time understanding. If we had, Julio Jones and Sanu and all these guys at receiver, I would understand why they would not have given him opportunities to play outside, at least, you know, maybe put him in the slot. But we are so, you know, untalented outside, even before Kevin White got hurt, even before Cam Meredith. We don't have any speed. We don't have anybody that can take the top off of a defense. This kid has something special. And you know, as great as his impact was yesterday, I think he had 113 total yards. But everyone.
And by the way, we're talking about Tariq Cohen here, if you just turned your radio on.
Exactly. Tariq Cohen, the third-round draft pick. The thing was, every one of those yards was action-packed, dynamic, and infused the offense and the fans and everybody on the field with the great energy. And a kid like, you got to find ways to get him the ball. And I understand that Jordan Howard, you know, this is an offense that's based around the running of Jordan Howard. But you know what? When you get into a game like that, where you're playing a team with a lot of firepower and you're down, you got to find ways to score and get him the ball. And for him not to be involved at the end of the game on first, second, or third down, when we're goal to goal at the five, was crazy. But all that being said, you're going to tell me that Cohen wouldn't be more valuable than somebody like Josh Bellamy or somebody else outside? Because this, nobody could cover this kid. Nobody could tackle him. So, you know, he was a revelation. But that's the first time we've seen him in a real game. We've seen, you know, the coaches have seen him in practice and through the preseason. And I hate to say it, but you would think they would project him into certain packages where he could have a bigger role. Because, again, this is an offensive league today. It's not about playing defense and plodding on offense. Hey, you gotta score and you gotta be explosive. And we don't have anybody that's explosive other than number 29, Tariq Cohen.
Dave, last word from you.
Well, just talking about playmakers, and I think we had this conversation 2 weeks ago after they lost Cameron Meredith, and now apparently Kevin White on the shelf. So do they have to go out and find – I know they had some guys in last week for tryouts. Go out and find a wide receiver?
I don't know why we haven't done it before. You know, again, we all know what's at stake here. Obviously, I think this would be the seventh year the Bears don't make the playoffs. John Fox has won 9 games through 2 seasons now. You know, I think he's 9 at was 30 or something like that, something crazy. Hey, there's an intense desire for this team to find players that help them win. And they spend a lot of money. You know, think about what they spent on defense. Well, why haven't we tried to do what's necessary to find an explosive offensive player? Again, OB, the great Ed Obradovich, who played long ago when they didn't have these liberalized rules, and even when I played, they didn't have as much protection for the receiver as the quarterback. They want an explosive, high-scoring game. And yet we defy logic by not having any explosive, high-scoring receivers. And so, ultimately, I think Ryan Pace has to, you know, he's doing a disservice to this football team, because Akeem Hicks is playing his can off trying to win. Marcus Cooper played his can off trying to win. The offensive line, they played hard. Jordan, hey, you got to give them help. And when both of your wide receivers go down, you can't expect the next man up. And Tanner Gentry would be a nice name to throw out, the kid that was impressive in training camp. Well, guess what? How impressive was he? He got on the practice squad. Well, great rookies. They, you know, you play them. So I'm just saying, this week Ryan Pace may have to bite the bullet and say, hey, I may have to trade draft picks, but I need to find a receiver playmaker that has speed, because we've got to be able to be viable on the outside. If we don't back people off by game 3, they're all going to be up there eight yards off the line of scrimmage waiting for Jordan Howard.
It's Dan Hampton, Hall of Famer. We will break it down with Tampa Bay later in the week. Thank you. Thank you, Hamp.
Go Bears!
Sponsored by ChevyDriveChicago.com. And the guy you don't want to be in the film room today is Bobby Massey. He's the number 70. He's the right tackle who missed the tackle that led to the sack that ended the game. Missed the block, I should say, that led to the sack that ended the game. 7:26. Come back. How do you ride out the hurricane in Miami with your family? Oh, and where are all the cruise ships? Stuart Shear on the cruise guide did it this weekend, and he's got that information next on 720 WGN. Merrick. Stuart Shearon's a cruise guy. We were texting yesterday. So you rode this out in Miami. What was the decision point for you and your family to stay?
Well, we didn't have much of a choice, Steve, considering the track it was on. I was thinking about, you know, getting my family out on Monday, because we essentially had almost 9 days to prepare for this.
Yep.
And I blinked on Monday, and you know, by Monday night, which was, 5 days before the storm was supposed to hit, you know, all the flights were booked. And, I mean, the chaos that occurred at the airport was just insane. especially the 2 days leading up to the storm, with canceled flights and crews weren't showing up, which understandably they were dealing with their families.
Sure.
But the roadways, a typical 3.5 hour drive to Orlando was taking 9 hours. The roads were just jammed because this storm was coming up the middle. And
you didn't know if you're going to run out of gas and all that. So what part of Miami do you guys live in?
We live in Coral Gables.
So any damage?
Thankfully, no. Just a lot of trees. And, the roads are blocked. Power's out. I mean, it was 1.7 million people down here in South Florida without power.
Right.
But thankfully, I think this is my 9th or 10th hurricane. And we did okay. But, the typical safe havens were also in harm's way. And, when Irma, came up by us, she was a category 4, and now, by Orlando, she's barely a 1.
The Keys are a mess, and Miami didn't exactly escape here because portions of Miami are a mess this morning as well, right?
Yes. A lot of, the storm surge on the coast. I'm about 4 miles inland, but it's just hard to see. When the storm is approaching, the lead up, the waiting. And the storm slowed down. The howling winds and it just progressively went louder and louder as each of these bands came through. It's harrowing, but
yeah. And your kids are old enough to be scared.
They are, and they haven't been through a hurricane since they were 3 and 4 years old. So it's been a while, but you just don't expect it. But
how does that work in a house? Because do you have to have a meeting with your wife to discuss this? How do couples do this? And if you're the one that votes to stay and she agrees, are you in trouble afterwards?
No, but it's just it's like I said, it's tough. I know people that evacuated went to relatives in Sarasota,
right, and thought they were right in the middle of it there,
and then they wound up having to get on a plane and they flew to New Orleans.
So, I was talking to somebody yesterday that drove to southern Georgia.
Yeah, I know a lot
of southern Georgia's getting slammed. And there was somebody else that was going up in the panhandle and they were going to go to and then cut across and go over to Tennessee. Well, Tennessee's going to get hit eventually. It's like this storm is just too big to get away from.
Well, it was. But at this point, Steve, it's really not that big a deal. It's 75 miles an hour as of 8 o'clock this morning. And it'll be turning into a tropical storm. At that point, it's really nothing because it's just rain.
Yeah, somebody made the equivalence here, and I don't disagree with it. It's 8 inches of snow in Chicago in the winter. It's a pain. You're going to have schools closed for a day or two. Some people are going to lose power, and you're going to be okay. Having said that, we know that the Keys are going to need a lot of help to get back in service. We know that parts of Miami, parts of Daytona Beach and Jacksonville's had some record flooding, and there is still flooding to come with storm surge that comes afterwards. It needs to be paid attention to, and along with some amazing pictures of the incredible low-pressure system that this storm created, which literally sucked the ocean out to sea.
Yeah.
Well, that water's got to come back somewhere, which brings up the cruise ship part of this. This is your business. This is what you do every day. Where did those cruise ships go? They dropped people off in Miami who lived there and wanted to tend to their homes, but there were people on those boats who weren't from there who literally said, we're going to stay with you. What did those ships do?
Well, the nice thing was, for example, you're mentioning, several ships did this. NCL brought in two of their ships. The Escape was on a 7-night cruise, wasn't due back in until Saturday. And the Norwegian Sky came in on Friday as scheduled. And people that wanted to get off to go home were allowed to. People that had nowhere to go, didn't want to deal with it, went back out to sea. So they switched ships, went on to Norwegian Escape. And they've enjoyed 3 days in Cozumel, Mexico. Completely unscathed. Several ships were off the coast of Costa Maya, which is the southern tip of the Yucatan Peninsula. Some ships, were off the southwestern coast of Cuba.
So you basically just had to find a place where the ship's radar indicated and the experts indicated, yeah, the storm's not coming here, and go hide there.
And they did it. They did it flawlessly. They have ships that have already arrived in many of the islands that didn't have any passengers on them, providing aid. This morning, one of NCL's ships is arriving in St. Thomas to pick up 2,000 stranded Americans to bring them back home. Hurricane relief assistance is already on the way by the, with the industry. Royal Caribbean with one of their canceled sailings on Friday canceled the sailing, so the other passengers got off. They got on their flights, and then the cruise line offered free passage to their employees who wanted to use that as an evacuation.
Wow!
Rather than going to a shelter, which almost 100,000 people around the state are in a shelter right now, they could use the ship and get out of harm's way, and they did. And I mean, it was just amazing what they did. And I could tell you, and I said this from the moment they started doing things, I would much rather be on a cruise ship than sitting, than being at home or having having to ride this out, because this people have, don't realize the ships have all the same weather tracking equipment,
right?
That they do ashore. They also provide a huge amount of data, season all year round to the Hurricane Center, and they're also in contact with the Hurricane Center and their home offices, so they can make the best plans to ensure that the ships and the passengers are safe.
Very impressive story, and I'm glad you guys are okay. I know it's going to be pain for a couple of days, but I'm glad you guys are okay, and best of luck to everybody in Miami still dealing with this.
Thanks, Steve.
In the aftermath. Hold the line, Stuart, if you would. That's Stuart Sherrill on the Cruise Guy. Straight to the big story. You need a quick break. Quick break? Tell me, yes, quick break, and then we'll come back in 1 minute on 720 WGN. Just passed a moment of silence for 9/11 victims today. The names will be read by surviving family members and loved ones in New York, as they always are. The 16th anniversary of 9/11 today. Hard to believe, but true. Ryan Noble standing by from CNN. You know, because, and certainly it's understandable, Ryan, but because of the Hurricane Irma coverage, we didn't talk much about this date coming up, but it always stops us, those of us who are old enough to remember it and live it, and today is no exception.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Steve. It was funny, I was getting ready for the upcoming week, and they sent out a planning note at CNN, and there were all these events that were put out for September 11th, and I had to stop myself and say, oh my gosh, that's Monday, and it certainly brings back a flood of memories. There's certainly more people in this business that have more impressive stories about their contribution to the coverage on that day, but that was my second day anchoring news. I started out as a sports reporter in Utica, New York, and they had promoted me to anchor the news. And my second day was covering 9/11, and we were close enough proximity to New York City that we had a lot of people impacted by it. And just like everybody, that's a day you never forget.
Exactly right. And I've told the story before, but coming back in to WGN to do, I was doing the midday show at that point, and I was the first live show after we left network coverage, and to see literally nobody but first responder type vehicles and emergency vehicles on the road here in Chicago, because we found out afterwards, along with the airlines being grounded, that we were obviously on the target list. And mm-hmm. There's a point where you drive in from the western suburbs, Ryan, where you kind of crest over a hill. And I was coming in on 55 here, the Stevenson. And there's a point where you crest this small hill and you see the city skyline. And it was impossible not to picture a plane flying into the Sears Tower, as it was called at that point, or hitting the Hancock, because it was so bizarre. Because it was a beautiful day here, like it was in New York, but the world changed on that day, and it'll never be the same.
Yep, I just drove by the Pentagon less than 5 minutes ago, and amazing to think the bustle of a morning like today. I mean, I was essentially driving by the Pentagon around the same time.
Right.
That the flight ran into that building, and it's hard to wrap your mind around it.
And you think about the victims of Flight 93 and the heroism that was on there, and you think about the fact that there will never, in my feeling, there'll never be another situation where if there are able-bodied grown men and women on a plane, that terrorists will be able to take it down without a fight.
I read somewhere that with regard to 9/11, it's 1 degree of separation, meaning you knew someone who knew someone involved with any of the attacks, Shanksville, Pentagon, or New York.
And I mentioned this earlier too, Ryan, and you know this to be true. You talk to these guys all the time, but it's the attacks we don't hear about that are amazing. That's one of the reasons that I'm as hard on Trump as I am, because the president needs to support the intelligence services to protect us. And every time they stop another terrorist plot in this country, they don't raise their hand and go, guess what I did today at work?
Yeah, I talk to Mark Warner all the time. I worked in Virginia for a long time, and now in my capacity covering Capitol Hill, he's the vice chair of the Senate Intelligence Committee. And he would tell me that all the time, you know, the thing about terrorism is that they only have to be right once,
right?
Where we have to be right 100% of the time, and they're going to just keep trying because they lose nothing by trying. Where you know the intelligence community cannot make a mistake, and by and large, they have not made mistakes when it comes to an attack of that level.
Yeah, and by the way, nobody gets into that job to get rich. You've got guys at the highest level of at the CIA who've been working at it for years and years and years.
Right.
And they're making less money than the 22-year-old down the street who came up with a computer idea.
Yeah, or famous. You know, you don't go to the CIA to have people know your contribution. Those people do it in anonymity. And even if they lose their lives in defense of this country, the most they'll get is a star out at Langley, honoring their service. It's really a thankless job, and they do it simply for one reason and one reason only, and that's because they love their country.
The other thing I wanted to discuss with you today is fairly obvious, but I just wanted to say personally a thanks to the work that CNN did this weekend. Wall-to-wall coverage of a storm of that size and being everywhere CNN was in Florida, I mean from the top of the state to the bottom of the state, and going nonstop was very impressive. So you guys ought to be proud of that.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. And if you can allow me to digress for a second, I saw a lot of people on my social media this week kind of whining about the way, you know, the coverage and that, you know, why do people have to be standing in the rain and, you know, why can't they seek shelter and why are they telling people to go when they're staying? And that's precisely the reason that they do it. You know,
right.
You know, it's our job in these situations to be the eyes and ears of people that can't be in those positions. And if we weren't giving it the level of coverage that we were and the attention that we were, you know, I think there should still be a lot of people in harm's way. And it is one of the most difficult things to do in television broadcasting, to stand there for hours and hours and hours and get pelted by rain and wind. And, you know, our biggest stars were doing that this weekend, the Anderson Coopers and the Chris Cuomos and John Bermans of the world. These are guys that could have easily taken a pass on that responsibility if they wanted. And instead, they stood up and took on that challenge. So, yeah, I appreciate you saying that, Steve, and I am very proud of our team.
As the weather portion of this goes along, we'll continue to keep an eye on the flooding and the flood surge, which is still a major issue. And the storm will continue to progress north. And then, of course, the question is, how are the people in Houston doing? Because all the focus had to be on Irma this weekend, but I assume you guys are looking into that story as well.
Yeah, I mean, there are still parts of Houston where the floodwaters have yet to recede, and you're still talking about tens of thousands of people that are still homeless. And I was on Capitol Hill last week, and it was amazing when we talked early in the week by what happened by the end of the week, how quickly they ended up getting that deal done, and there's a whole political conversation about that. But one of the things that Speaker Paul Ryan said in his press conference this week was, and it is a good thing, but it is a problem for the government, is that they are actually getting FEMA aid out so quickly, far more quickly than they could have ever done in previous disasters because of technology, where, you know, you literally can sign up through disaster.gov, get your information in there, and have money deposited into your account in less than 24 hours. Which, you know, in previous disasters, it meant a lot of paperwork. It meant, you know, snail mail back and forth between Washington and a physical check being sent to you. And it's much different now through electronics. The problem with that is they're burning through the money a lot quicker than they normally would have, and which is why it was so vital for them to get that money back into FEMA's bank account. So it is a much different situation. And so the assistance and the aid seems to be getting to those folks a lot quicker than it might have in previous situations, but they still have a long recovery ahead of them.
You know, kind of jumped out this weekend as a star to me was Tom Sater. Tom Sater is the international weatherman on CNN. So you usually don't see him unless you're up at odd hours like I am.
Right.
But yeah. He was great.
Yeah, all those weather guys. My wife made the same exact comment, and she's like, you know, there's all these really great meteorologists at CNN, and you hardly ever see them because, you know, the regular CNN domestic network is not going to do like a weather forecast at every 10 minutes. But our international audience really relies on their weather forecast. So I'm on our international broadcast quite a bit. So I'm really familiar with Derek Van Dam, who's a great meteorologist. And you mentioned Tom Sater and Allison Chinchara. I mean, these guys are all really good. And, of course, Chad Myers is one of our big stars. They work so hard. And, you know, the interesting thing, I've worked with meteorologists my entire career, I'm sure you have, Steve, and they know the geography of the communities that they're in, down to the, you know, the very tiny hamlet that could be impacted by a storm. Our meteorologists have to have that level of geographic knowledge for the entire world. They need to know what it's like in India and the United Kingdom and in Asia. So the idea that they can just pop in and be on top of Florida the way they were is really impressive.
Yeah, and pictures matter, and that's the reason that you stand out in the rain in the middle of a storm, so you can inform others that it is as bad as we're telling you it is. It wouldn't have the same impact if they're sitting in a dry studio.
Yeah, you know, if we were doing that, there'd be that level of criticism, too.
So, yeah, why aren't you out there?
Exactly.
And honestly, what's more fun than seeing an international star on CNN with a perfect head of hair getting drowned like a rat? Come on, that's a good time.
Yeah, I can't agree more.
High fives to everybody there. Well done by you guys, and thank you, Ryan Nobles.
Thanks, Steve. Have a great week.
There you go. That's at Ryan Nobles on social media, as always.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
Patty and I, and especially me, this is a time to be strong. This is a time to fight through adversity. This is a time for me to be strong for my children, be strong for Patty. And this is also a time for Patty and me to get home so we can explain to our kids, our babies, Amy and Annie, what happened, what all this means, and where we're going from here. So we're going to keep fighting on through this adversity, and see you soon.
Well, maybe not so much. That's Blago, the former governor. I'll tell you why that's pertinent in just a second, but first allow me to introduce one of the best reporters in the country, and he's been that forever. Prior to that, he worked for the Whipcracker over at WBBM.
Yeah, and it's his birthday today.
Phil Rogers' birthday today?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I didn't know that. Did you get anything for Phil, your former underling?
Phil's a good friend. I wouldn't call him an underling.
Well, at one point he was an underling.
No, not an underling. He was a co-worker.
Didn't he work, wasn't he a writer at BBM?
He was.
And weren't you the editor?
I was.
Well, then he worked for you.
Yeah, but I wouldn't use the term underling.
I don't know. I was talking to Phil off the air. He said you were a tough boss.
Yeah, a tyrant. Probably.
Remember
a
when
tyrant.
You told me that, Phil? Remember when you told me Annette was a tough boss?
I, Steve, you wouldn't. You know, that place was like Lucy and Ethel at the chocolate factory. And Dave was on the desk. I was a new kid from Oklahoma, and boy, he just ran it. Really.
He's a whipcracker. He's a whipcracker. All right. So, how did you get an interview with Rod Blagojevich?
Well, I want you to know it was a long time coming. This was actually a story that was 5 years in the making. We worked on it for a very long time, and finally, through his wife Patty and through his attorney Lynn Goodman, they agreed that they would like to have him speak to somebody. And now once we did that, it was tough to get the Bureau of Prisons on board, because they don't really allow reporters inside. They finally agreed to the interviews. We did two one-hour interviews, and I think you're going to be really amazed by what you hear.
They will air when?
First installment airs tonight at 10 o'clock, and then for the next two nights. And then we're going to do a half-hour special Friday evening at 6:30.
Got to be tough to cut the 2 hours down to a half hour, but I know your guys will get it done. Having said all that, you're not a guy that gives into preconditions on interviews. Did they ask for any?
There were none. There were no preconditions at all. The only thing they told me in advance was that he wanted to talk about his case. He was happy to talk about life in prison, and we go into that. But he really wanted to talk about his case and how he insists he is still maintaining his innocence and still has hopes to get his case overturned. He's got one more shot to the Supreme Court, and he's going there this winter.
What is the anticipation when you sit down with him? Do you anticipate that he is the same guy, or that he's changed by the years he's already done inside?
You know, that is a great question, because I really thought that I was going to hear a very different Rod Blagojevich, and he was exactly the Rod Blagojevich that I've known since he was a state representative.
Right.
He was hale and hearty. He was funny. He really, really is a thoughtful person who really, really, I don't know if you know this about him, Steve, but he's a student of history.
Oh, sure.
He quotes literature. I mean, you know him well, and you know that he has a photographic memory, and he can remember little minutiae about encounters he had with you, as a matter of fact, over the years. it was really a fascinating conversation.
Phil, did he give you any indication as to what he might be doing? I know it's far out, but post-prison life, has he talked to you about reality show? I know he was on Apprentice, writing a book, other political aspirations, although I don't know if that's going to be possible because of the conviction.
Andrea, I'll tell you something, and you know him well, too. Mm-hmm. I'll give you a tease, and that is I'm going to tell you in our stories about a reality show he turned down.
Oh, how about that?
Okay.
You'll be shocked what the premise of that one was going to be. But he says he would like to do some writing. He would like to do some legal work, he says. And he says he absolutely would come back to Chicago. He said, after all, Chicago's my home.
Was there, and again, these interviews will air starting, you said, tonight for the next three nights?
Yes, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday night.
10 o'clock, NBC 5. And then Friday night is the half-hour special, right?
Yes, that's right.
All right. One of the things that really troubled me when he went away was the need for public adulation, even as his daughter tried to get him to come inside, and the last night he'd be home with the family. How much time was spent talking about family?
A lot. That's what he wants to talk about. He in fact, he mentions more than anything his two daughters and his wife, Patty. And we also do a sit-down with Patty. It's her first sit-down interview since he went away to prison. And we talk a lot about those visits in Colorado. They see him about three times a year, believe it or not.
Wow.
Although there are nightly phone calls. And we also talk a lot about what he's up to these days. He spends a lot of time working with other inmates. And we'll tell you what his job is inside prison. You might be surprised about that.
I'm guessing he is probably thought of in the same way, and I'm not comparing the two, but in the same way that Bernie Madoff is thought of in North Carolina, I would assume he's a leader in prison. I would assume people look to him for advice, and they want to talk to him.
Well, you know, exactly, Steve. One of the things he mentions is, you know, he said, you know, these aren't exactly choir boys in here. Some of these guys are pretty tough customers. He spends time working with them on mock job interviews. He says he goes out and walks the track with them, and he pretends to be the boss during a job interview. He explains you can't call a prospective employer dog, D-A-W-G, so that usually doesn't fly during the job interview. But he also said that he thinks there's a case to be made for inmates to say, look, I've overcome adversity. I did my time. I'm a good risk. I would fit in well with your organization. And, you know, we've heard that a lot. Former aldermen have also told me the same thing, that they think once they come out, some people are actually good job candidates as opposed to just the opposite.
Phil, and that was kind of my question to you, too. I know a lot of people say, oh, it's not a maximum security prison. It's a country club. Of course, no prison is a country club, per se. But what does he do during the day? You mentioned the track. Is there like a workout routine, or what's the food like? Just a little
basics
of prison.
A guy with that brain, isn't he bored?
Yeah.
Everybody who I have ever talked to who's done time in a federal institution says the biggest issue is boredom. And Rob Blagojevich told me that that's one thing that he has really strived to overcome. He says, you know, your time in here is really what you make it. He said, I've done a lot of reading. He said, believe it or not, I'm catching up on a lot more reading than I ever intended to. He reads a lot. He writes a lot. He's writing essays for his daughters on famous Americans. He's been doing that. He also... I must tell you, he looks pretty good. If he's working out in the gym and on the track, it's really working for him.
This leads me down a path that I didn't want to go down because I wanted to leave this. And you can tell me if you can't say it. But which hair did you get?
We got the current hair. It is just as you may have heard during his
silver,
where everybody saw him. It's almost bright. Silver, tending to white, yeah.
How about that? And, of course, he can no longer have a bagman carry the brush. And I think you know what I'm talking about.
Oh, they used to refer to it as the football, exactly.
Right. Well, it's an amazing get. I salute you for it. It's Phil Rogers at NBC 5. The next three nights, NBC 5 News at 10, you're going to be able to see Phil's exclusive sit-down. No, nothing more exclusive than this. This is, you know, in TV terms, breaking news and exclusive don't mean much anymore. This is actually an exclusive. And it'll be the next three nights. And then Friday night, what time does the special air?
6:30 on Friday night. And, you know, Steve, you're exactly right. This is the first time anybody will have heard Rod Blagojevich utter a peep, either written or out of his voice, since he went away 5.5 years ago.
Great get, Phil. Great interview. I can't wait to see it.
Well, he's a healthy guy, and by the way, I need to tell you something else I was completely wrong about. I thought when he went to prison, the family be over. I thought his wife would foul. I thought the kids would go their separate ways, but they've managed to keep the family together, and I would suppose Mrs. Blagojevich deserves the lion's share of credit for that.
I think so, and I must tell you, they speak a lot about the girls and really how tough it is during those visits. Remember, the girls are much older than when he went away. They were actually very young. The older daughter's in college now. The younger one is well into her teens. Very different children than when he went away.
It's Rod Blagojevich. Sit down with Phil Rogers in the new Rod Hair. It's tonight. Tomorrow night, Wednesday night. And Dave, anything that Phil hasn't done for you that you want to correct him on at this point? Or
no,
those days
no,
over?
No. I think he got everything right. And okay. And I'll add happy birthday.
Happy birthday, Phil. Pretty cool.
Thank you all very much. Steve, go easy on Dave there. Have him tell you sometime about our trout fishing experience. The scenery was spectacular, but the fishing didn't work so well.
We didn't do
that.
Oh.
Right.
Yeah.
I want to hear that.
Well, that's fantastic. You know, he does wear his waders to work once a week. So
I do, but that's because things get a little deep in here.
Nice job, Phil. All the best.
Thank you, guys.
There you go.
See you, Phil. He's the best.
And also Rob back on NBC5 News, fighting cancer.
Yes, it looks
good
fantastic.
For him, Rob Stafford. Let's see, traffic time. It is Mary back with that. And then will you give us a couple of headlines from
Absolutely.
Show business?
You
Dean is off
of
today.
Yes.
Or Dean's traveling today, I should
or
say.
Scary ones, I should say.
Hallelujah, everybody say geez, Merry Christmas from the family.
That's on the Steve Cochran all-time top three Christmas tunes. I like A White Christmas. I like A Please Come Home for Christmas. Like I said before, I like a Nat King Cole's Christmas. And then this, Montgomery Gentry. Why are they in the news?
That's a good one. Well, Montgomery Gentry's Troy Gentry killed in a helicopter crash late afternoon. We all found out the news on Saturday. Of course, one half of the popular country
That's
duo.
That's an awful story.
Montgomery
what was it?
Gentry. Helicopter crash.
Mechanical or
it
what?
It was Medford, New Jersey. They're still investigating. He was actually supposed to perform with Eddie Montgomery at the Flying W Airport and Resort that night in Medford. Concert obviously canceled immediately, and they are still investigating the details of the crash. Gentry leaves behind his wife, Angie, and two daughters, Kaylee and Taylor.
Oh, sad story.
Very obviously. Sad story. So thoughts and prayers going out to his family as well, and the country music community, too. All right, this is in honor of Dean, since he's not with us today. There was a very special screening involving clowns in Texas over the weekend. You know, the new It movie is coming out that Dean's been talking about?
It was out this weekend. It had the biggest weekend by far, and really huge numbers, surprisingly huge.
There was a special screening over the weekend. It was for clowns only, or people who wanted to dress up like clowns. Unfortunately, though, not everybody read the fine print before they bought the ticket, so you had a lot of scared moviegoers. In Texas. Actually, this was a lot of people coming from all over the country to go to this particular screening as well. How scary would that be, though? Everybody in the audience dressed up as a clown, and not a happy clown either. Not your typical bozo.
It would be annoying.
You think? I don't know. You know, Dean's not with us today. I'm wondering.
No. Dean could have been taken by a clown. So those are your main stories?
Those are the main stories. And real quick, this is such a... You're hearing all these great stories about, you know, all the celebrities pitching in to help out with Hurricane Harvey in Houston. And now Irma, too. There's going to be a lot of relief efforts coming out for Floridians as well. Josh Gad revealing late on Friday that his Frozen co-star, Kristen Bell, literally saved his entire family on Florida's East Coast from Hurricane Irma. She got them a hotel room further inland. He was Olaf, the snowman, was raised in Hollywood, Florida, which of course, is right near Miami. So Kristen Bell called his parents. She said, get to a hotel right now. And then he tweeted put on Instagram a thank you picture, and she and her parents were just kind of waving to him. And he literally said thank you because without her... He called her an angel sent from heaven.
And a cute, funny one, too.
Nice. Yeah, she is. She's great.
In North Dakota's Kara Mon is the new Miss America, but everybody's talking about Miss Louisiana.
Speaking of...
And her incredible ventriloquism act.
Her name is Larissa Bonacchisti, I believe.
Uh-huh.
And
she was like doing a little puppet show.
Yeah, and they're yodeling it's a ventriloquist act with yodeling puppets.
So she's got
the big smile and her cleavage, and there you go.
And you didn't think there was a talent competition.
You think there was a third puppet in her cleavage?
I haven't seen it.
There may have been. Back with a big story next on 720 WGN. Joint Chiefs Chair General Joseph Dunford speaking at the Pentagon right now, and the president will speak after. It is 9/11. And many of you may have not even connected with that yet because of all the news of Hurricane Irma this weekend. And there have been significant distractions. And 9/11, is not front and center like it used to be. Mm-hmm. It will always be that day when the world changed. And I guess I would say if your kids were little then, and I mean little. I mean, you think about this. Kids who graduated from high school this year were two on 9/11. So if you haven't already done it, don't leave it to the schools to tell the story of 9/11. I think it's important as a family, you talk about how you felt on that day and you tell them what you were doing and, you know, you share those feelings and those thoughts because we live in a country that will never be the same, that will always be under the gun for terrorism, domestic and abroad. And just thank God for the intelligence services that protect us every day, because without the CIA, the FBI, and local law enforcement officials, who knows how many more of these tragedies, travesties is a word I prefer to use, we'd have.
Amen to that. And they run in while we run away and try and seek shelter.
Well, firemen, obviously the firemen.
Oh, right. Incredible. Fire police, absolutely. By the way,
more firemen died on that day than any other of the first responders, obviously.
And I completely echo your thought, too, about educating the kids, too, because they were young. Judy Pilak's son was 3.5 years old when we were all here on that day, and she brought him in, and he's in Tom Peterson's office coloring.
Yeah.
And she recently, he's in college now, a great student at University of Iowa, and she mentioned him, do you remember that day? And he said, I just remember a lot of commotion, a lot of people, and I got to color. You know, he got to come to work with Mom that day. So she's, you know, obviously over the years.
Well, it's funny, too, right, because the difference in ages. Ross was 10, Amy was 14 or 15.
Yeah.
Amy and her high school, kids, they were all wrapped up in it.
Right.
Because they were old enough to understand it. Ross at 10, I'm pretty sure we've had this conversation about this before, but I seem to remember him saying that he knew the teachers were scared and the teachers were tense. You could tell the adults were tense. It's the difference between, what, fifth grade and ninth grade or sixth and tenth or whatever they were at that point.
Absolutely. But as we said earlier, too, we'll always remember where we were, what we were doing. We, of course, were here. And you get a little, you get emotional. I do, at least every time we talk about it.
And the weirdest thing is the kids, you know, the kids, you all have to carry on. I mean, the next day you had to do the same thing. You had to go to school. The kids had their activities. Not much was changed as far as kids were concerned. They tried to keep it the same for kids. You know, I remember going to drop them off to school, and I didn't drop them off because I was here at work, but picking them up, and it was so difficult because I was so emotional, and they were just like, la, la, la.
Yeah.
You know, a typical day.
And they, you know, and they should be, right?
Because they're innocent. They're innocent.
You don't want them all caught up in the stress of that.
And you didn't want them feeling what you were feeling.
Right.
You really didn't.
How weird was it?
Protect them always.
How weird was it, too, for the next 3 or 4 days at least, there was ground stoppage, no planes in the air. How weird
was
it? We went out with a couple of the producers just, you know, for some dinner, and we were just looking up at the sky a few days later saying, oh my gosh, it's still so quiet.
I remember the first time I heard a plane overhead, and you thought, oh my God, it's happening again.
Yes. And didn't you look at people differently, too? I mean, it was like a sense
of
camaraderie. You're walking down the street, and you would just say hi to people, or people were being super nice to each other.
Yeah, or you'd cross the street to shake the hand of a cop who was directing traffic, or whatever the case
right.
may be.
That, don't you think, too, Steve, that is after that time we started thanking police, firemen, first responders, thanking them.
Soldiers. Service people.
Absolutely.
You also might remember that Republicans and Democrats stood on the Capitol steps and sang God Bless America, or was it America the Beautiful? Doesn't matter. They were singing together, and I believe that's the last time they've all agreed. They even agreed on pitch, key, and who would sing first, but it only lasted a few days. I don't know if you remember this, but a few weeks after that, there was a plane crash in Queens on Fire Island. And you're absolutely sure that that had to be terrorism, and it turned out it was mechanical.
No, absolutely. Everything changed. Everything.
The great problem going forward, again, is if a cyber attack that gets control of the money system. That's how much the world has changed now, much more so than a bomb going off. And we have to wrap our arms and our heads and our hands around the domestic terrorists in this country and choke them off.
But thank you to everybody who are part of the first responders. And like I said, I hope you'll just talk to your kids or your grandkids about how you felt on 9/11, because it's important stuff. And if they try to look at their phone when they're doing it, you slap that phone out of their hands.
Sorry, Grandpa, I was just taking notes.
Alex Stone is not only Alex, he's a great Alex Stone from ABC, and joins us now. I never get a chance to talk to him enough. He's West Coast, and, you know, we're here, and
he's, you never call,
he's
you
a plate. There's that fact that I never call and I never write. Good morning, my friend. Nice to have you on the show again.
Steve, good to talk to you again. How are you?
I'm all right. How's the family? Everybody okay?
They're doing well. I just FaceTimed with them a moment ago. They're all good.
Alex is covering Irma. What do we know about flood surge this morning?
Well, I'm in Tampa, and I got to say, things look pretty good here in Tampa. Folks are just beginning to come out right now. The curfew lifted a couple of hours ago, and they got lucky here in Tampa because they thought it was going to be a Cat 4. It ended up being a Category 2, and the eye they thought was going to go right over downtown Tampa ended up going to the east of Tampa, which meant that Tampa got the good side of this storm, the lighter side, and Orlando got whipped because they were on the dirty side of the storm, and they got the heavier rain, the heavier wind. So they've got more damage in Orlando. We have heard from Tampa International Airport. They say they are not going to be allowing flights in today. No flights will be coming in. Same with Miami today. We haven't heard from Orlando yet. But the biggest areas of concern at this point are the Florida Keys. Still, we don't know exactly what happened out there. Also, the area where it made its second landfall on Marco Island. We understand that there may be people in a hospital out there who are trapped, who rode out the storm and are injured and need of medical assistance, which is an area south of here. And then over in Jacksonville, they've got storm surge on the East Coast. Shows you how big this thing is, Steve, that we were dealing with storm surge here that never really materialized, and they're dealing with it on the other coast from this same storm.
70,000 square miles is the size of the storm. The size of Florida is 65,000 square miles. Bigger than the state.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely massive. And you've got now well over half of the people in Florida without power, 6 million customers, and each customer is a home or a business. And you think a home would have more than one person in it quite often, that you're talking many millions of people who are without power. Could be weeks before all the power is brought back on. And they're bringing in crews from all different states, the effort to try to bring the power. And we knew from the beginning, very different than Harvey, this is about the wind damage, not so much the flooding like Harvey. This is what the wind did as it came through, and it did quite a bit. By the way, crazy scene last night before it came into this area to see Tampa Bay empty out. The water disappeared. People were walking on the floor of the bay taking selfies. They were warned to get out of there because the water can come just as fast back in. But boats were sitting on the dry ground. The wind took the water out, and it has now come back in, but luckily without any major storm surge issue.
Okay, that's what I was going to ask you about, Alex, too. You mentioned the surges briefly. Any more concern about that? And flooding now, I think people are really worried about, obviously, because now you can't get to where you need to get to, either to get back home or to start cleaning up with the damage, too.
Yeah, luckily there's not a ton of flooding at this point because it is different than Harvey. Harvey sat and just rained and rained and ran the same spot. This moved through pretty quickly. There were a couple of rescues, more than a couple, but 100 that went on in Orange County overnight in some homes, some neighborhoods that had some flooding. They took care of that. There are a few other areas that may have some flooding issues, but no, on the storm surge, that didn't materialize on the West Coast the way that they had feared it would. In Naples, they thought 15 feet
it
was
going to
be the storm
like
surge wiping out anything that was in its way. That didn't end up
it's
happening.
It's bizarre. It looks like Jacksonville is going to be the major problem for a storm surge.
Yeah, potentially. Luckily, we're told it is receding. I just talked to our producer
good.
She says it's going back out, and it's mainly in the streets. It's kind of contained in the streets, somewhat like Miami was yesterday. Somewhat superficial, wasn't rushing into homes and neighborhoods, at least in Miami. The early reports in Jacksonville that we're getting that it may go into some hotel lobbies, but for the most part, seems somewhat contained in the streets, but we'll have to see.
Alex, thank you as always. I'll see you at the cast party.
Thanks, guys. See you there.
Right, there you go. That's Alex Stone from ABC News.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show, 720 WGN.
All right, 9:12, making almost 9:13, live on Seal TV and in the Allstate Showcase Studio. This is show number 985. 15 shows away, it seems like the 1,000th show will be right around the corner. But with a couple of days off, it's actually the first week of October. We've targeted October 2nd, I believe.
October 2nd, yes.
And we'll be announcing details on the 1,000th show coming up. Because you think about it, Wally Phillips probably did 10,000 shows.
Mm-hmm.
Bob Collins probably did 10,000 shows.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Spike Odell probably did 7,500 shows.
Mm-hmm.
I think 1,000 shows of me without being fired again, that's a bigger accomplishment than those other three.
Huge milestone.
Do an Oktoberfest theme to celebrate.
But everybody's doing Oktoberfest. I mean, you're just trying to see what I'd look like in the, what do they call
this? The Lederhosen.
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 We know what you look like.
Yeah,
we've seen
that.
Ridiculous.
Right.
Yeah, there's no need to try to speculate on that. It's obvious. But it's the first week of October. Later this week, Mark DiCarlo will be on.
Oh, cool.
Mark's in town doing, I don't know, he's doing stand-up or he's doing some kind of situation. Later on this hour, CNN Global Affairs correspondent Elise Labatt interviewed Nikki Haley, who is one of the stars of the Trump administration.
Agreed.
We'll talk to Elise about that. And coming up here in a couple of minutes, Kali Al-Zabar, one of the most prolific and innovative jazz musicians and composers, mm-hmm. who is in town. And we'll talk to Khalil in a moment when he comes in. Right now it is 9:14 as we continue on 720 WGN. We are your Blackhawks radio station. And on October 5th, when the Blackhawks and the Penguins tee it up for the home opener, of course, we will have it here. Our friends at Chevy are doing the seats on the glass. You go to ChevyDriveChicago.com for details on how you can win those. But I'm here to tell you that leading up to that, we've got a lot of plans, too, for the Blackhawks as they start training camp and beyond. And, you know, I ran into Coach Q a couple times this summer. So he's ready for another exciting season on the show here as well.
Are we going to be involved with the practices this year? You know, they have these practices against fake teams.
I don't know what you're talking about. The scrimmages?
I don't know. Yeah, like a scrimmage.
What, are we going to be out there?
Wouldn't that be fun? You're in goal. Dave and I are skating around.
I mean, goal. It's not going to go well.
I'll ride the Zamboni.
Yeah. I think I'll coach.
Oh,
yeah. I'll be behind the bench.
Easily coach. My God.
Be behind the bench. I'll be sitting on the bench and I'll be coaching.
Saturday is the training camp festival. Lou Manfredini will be out there broadcasting live.
Why do they need to fix them?
He's got to fix the ice.
Is there a crack?
I think they're painting the ice tomorrow.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
that's always cool.
I was asked to do that a few years ago. I had an opportunity to do that. Were you and I doing that together that day?
Not me.
You haven't done it?
No.
I wasn't invited either. No, I'm kidding. But I remember you doing that.
Well, I didn't do it. I was offered a chance to do it, and it was, I think it was before I came back.
You know what?
Traffic. There was traffic.
With the kids. There were kids painting.
Anybody that hears me explain this is going, oh, yeah, sure there was. There was traffic coming in from the double wide in East St. Louis, and I just couldn't make it. So I had to call them and tell them I'm not going to get there.
I remember they had a bunch of kids, or students, I should say, and they were painting the ice. I don't know if it was last year or the year before. But
I asked if it was paint by number.
No.
Yeah, if you could do that. Because you can't, you know, as an artist, you need to want the Indian head not to look like the Indian head, right?
What kind of paint? You know what? That would be a good question. It can't be oil-based because then it would melt, obviously. But is it like an acrylic?
Boy, I wish I'd gotten there on time. I would have all the answers.
Right.
9:16. We welcome in studio an absolute legend, Kali Al-Zabar, going to be at Navy Pier. As part of Hear Here Chicago, its new site-specific project incorporating art, design, and performance, and showcasing works by world-renowned artists. We'll come back and talk. Do we need to give Khalil a chance to actually inhale and exhale? Yeah, let him catch his breath for a second, and then we'll come back right after this on 720 WGN. Yeah, yeah. Music of Kahil Al-Zabar. We're honored to have here in studio. Before I say hello, we've got breaking news by way of Twitter,
yeah.
Or at least we think this is newsworthy.
NBC News tweeting, Steve, that as President Trump continues to speak on the White House lawn and send nation's prayers to those in the path of Irma and those suffering following Hurricane Harvey, they're doing a 9/11 remembrance ceremony there as well. NBC News now just tweeting a few minutes ago that the Secret Service has ordered all journalists and crews off of the White House North lawn. It's all we know.
Are the citizens being asked to leave as well?
Just the journalists and the news crews. So I don't know if this is a President Trump thing or if it's just they're starting to leave the ceremony early, which I doubt because he still continues to speak.
Let's hope
the journalists and crews have been ordered off the lawn.
Well, let's hope he doesn't create some sort of narcissistic self-serving incident on 9/11 like any other day.
Can I jump in here? I have some more information on that.
Oh, you do?
CNBC is reporting there is some sort of security situation. That's according to Eamon Javers, who is a CNBC correspondent at the White House, says that there's no indication yet what the security situation is, but the Secret Service has told him that there is a security situation, in quotes.
Why would they allow the president to continue to speak in that circumstance?
He is not there. He's at the Pentagon.
He's already left and gone to the Pentagon. Oh, I see. So they're pulling people off the White House lawn. All right, now I'm connecting. Yep. You know, I get up very early, Khalil, so sometimes I take a while to catch up. Pleasure to meet you.
You're doing great, Steve.
Sorry about the interruption there, but pleasure to meet you.
Oh, it's a pleasure.
And this is a fascinating thing you're doing here in town because somehow, and you've got to explain this to me.
Okay.
You're combining your artistry with that of one of the great architect artists.
That's right.
Along with a great visual artist, Nick Cave.
It is a multidisciplinary extravaganza, I think, on the highest level. I'm very proud to be a part of the Hear Hear project for Expo Chicago at Navy Pier. And Nick Cave, a visual artist extraordinaire, and Jeannie Gang, such a visionary, to bring all of these disciplines together and to do it in our fair city like this is very exciting. And there's a lot of energy out, you know, for this project. You know, I was in...
How do you get pitched this?
Well, you know, it's like... I think the name is perfect. Hear, hear.
Yeah, H-E-A-R-H-E-R-E.
Right. So the double entendre, so to speak, is saying that this is something that you don't want to miss.
But in the explanation of it, do you get the concept right away or do you go, this is such a cool challenge, I want to be part of it? Or how does that work?
Well, I think, you know, like a couple of people asked me, they said, well, we know your work. We know a lot of your music and folks you've worked with like Pharoah Sanders and Dizzy Gillespie. But this is really different, man. An architect and you know, a visual artist. How does this go?
Right.
And it's all about storytelling. And it's all about, you know, kind of, in a way, virtual painting. We're taking our various disciplines. We've had a lot of dialogue with one another over the last couple of months. My score is one score for Upright is about 120 pages, and the score for Heard is about 137.
Is that right?
Yes.
That's like writing a feature film.
Oh, man, it's kind of like that, you know, because he's got all of these sections and stories inside of the full performance of each of these pieces, and so he wanted me to describe them musically. And I brought together, I think, a very stellar ensemble that's, you know, performing, you know, this work. So
the program does kick off with Upright Chicago. That's Wednesday night in the Aeon Grand Ballroom. By the way, I love the idea that this is 9 o'clock. Do you have any idea how late 9 o'clock sounds to me? You know, this show starts at 6 a.m. 9 o'clock to me sounds like, what are you crazy people doing up in the middle of the night?
Look, I was excited to come to WGN at 9 in the morning as a jazz musician.
I went, jazz, this is the middle of the night for you, right?
Yeah, here you go.
9 o'clock, the heel's just getting good.
Right.
So where will you be on Wednesday night? Is the work complete or are you performing, you know, live as well?
Yeah, the work is complete. We had a rehearsal yesterday with the full music ensemble.
Got it.
And the day before we had a full rehearsal with the Chicago Children's Choir. So for me, it's been like every day when I leave the interview today, I go straight to Navy Pier for another rehearsal with the dancers at 10 o'clock at Navy Pier. So, I mean, it's like... I am on the run with this project.
Don't you feel, as an artist and as an accomplished musician, that Chicago is such a great scene for not only music and art and performance art, but for young musicians and young artists emerging and learning the ropes?
Yeah, I mean, this for me is a very interesting, being mid-career and working with a lot of younger artists. We're kind of like where we were at the turn of the 20th century and the 21st century in terms of Chicago art, right? We had the skyscrapers coming up and all of the great film companies and actors here. We had all the great jazz musicians like Louis Armstrong and Sidney Bechet in Chicago. And now we've got from Nick Cave to Jeannie Gang to Kerry James Marshall to Cahill Elzabar to Kurt Elling, just all of these folks coming out of Chicago that are making world attention, but still seeing this as the vibrant crest for opportunity in our city.
Cahill, of course, you may remember, named Chicagoan of the Year. Was that
2006, I think?
Yeah, 2006.
And it's had an amazing run, but I've always felt like nobody could put a particular label on you. Do you like that?
I do, right? Yeah. I mean, I'm even going through that with my kids at this point. My oldest son, he wanted to play a song of a young artist that's out that's very popular now named Kamasi Washington. And mm-hmm. so my son played this song, Brother Malcolm, Brother Malcolm. So I said, Kahari, I wrote that song.
And
so he's like, whatever, Dad. You know, I wrote it, you know, like 40 years ago. Yeah. But I'm glad to see that I've been able to work, you know, in films like Mo' Money and Love Jones, scoring things like yeah. that, and then working with Dizzy or Stevie Wonder or the AACM, very avant-garde. I like not really having a label and being able to do adventures like this, you know, Nick Cave, Genie Gang project. You know, I want to keep growing.
Yeah, you got your master's in interdisciplinary arts. Mm-hmm. What does that mean?
I've worked always in theater. I'm a accomplished published poet, a musician, a composer, and a conceptual artist. So for many years, I've worked with visual artists, dancers, fashion designers, and interdisciplinary means that you're able to mix these things in conceptual ways.
And come up with a project that makes sense.
Yeah.
You put them all in a salad bowl and something comes out that you
want
to
eat. We're trying to toss it, trying to make something happen.
Right. And the incredible thing about, in my opinion, the incredible thing about what you do is to be able to teach it as well. Because to me, you have a gift mm-hmm. which doesn't necessarily translate. But you must see something in younger people that sparks a desire in you to try to pay it forward.
Well, you know, when you see the great guitarist Fareed Haq or the bass player with the Rolling Stones, Daryl Jones, uh-huh. these were my students. And then, you know, Genie Gang and I were talking. Her managing director of Genie Gang Studios is Aurelien Tismo, who's originally from Cameroon. But he was my student when I was a professor at the University of Illinois teaching interdisciplinary studies. So now to see one of the premier architects, they're saying, well, you're a musician, you know. So Judith Kirshner at U of I had me teaching in the School of Art and Design because of my interdisciplinary background. So I took architects, put them with musicians, writers, and dancers to a new, you know, curriculum.
I know we're a little short on time here, but are you... are you endlessly curious, or do you have the best kind of ADD?
I think it's good parents. So they dealt with that ADD.
They said, chase it.
Yeah, gave me a
chase
focus.
Chase it, Cahill, whatever you want.
That's right.
Well, good for you. As far as tickets and information goes, you're going to want to be a part of this. It's not just a Navy Pier thing. It's, frankly, in several locations around town. And we'll post some links on how you can be involved and how you can get there. And what else you got coming up after this is complete?
The day after, I fly to Mauritania, Africa.
Me too.
And I'm doing something for the French and the American government in Mauritania. And I was chosen because I'm a chevalier, a knight of the French government.
Ooh. Everything you just said, I'm not.
Oh, please.
What's the title that goes with that?
Well, Chevalier Medal of Letters says that I am a knight of the arts.
So would we have to address you as a certain chevalier?
What, sir?
Oh, sir. Oh, sir.
Plus, you should see the parking he gets. It's unbelievable.
But it's so funny. You know, we did the christening shortly for the knighthood in Chicago a couple of years ago. And it's a guy I grew up with. He goes, hey, man, I heard you a knight. I said, yeah. Well, can I come? I said, of course. Of course.
By the way, people come up to you and go, I'm a knight. It's not like you're coming up and going, I need tickets for a show. Remember me.
Right.
They're asking for special favors.
Right. There we go.
If they're calling in the knight side.
Oh, man.
The knighthood.
It's too funny.
God bless you. You have an amazing life.
Oh, thank you so much.
Yeah, and I appreciate you getting up and doing this.
With pleasure. With
all
pleasure.
Right. And again, it's all this week, but it starts off with the big Wednesday night festivities. And when you combine architecture, artists, and the performance and compositions of Cahill, well, you got something special happening, and a lot of great young artists as well. Oh, I know what I was going to talk to you about mm-hmm. before we run out of time. Mm-hmm. How's your optimism level for jazz in this country? I sometimes get concerned that younger kids don't have an appreciation for jazz like they did a generation ago.
What's happening now is that this saturation on the internet gives so much information. It's now creating, I think, more positive niche, and you have young people that are gathering a lot of stuff. They're looking back because of the authenticity of the past, and they're now sincerely trying to figure out how to connect it to the future. So from that perspective, I'm very hopeful.
Yeah, so optimism reigns.
Yeah.
The only Chevalier Medal of Letters we've had in all morning.
Oh, goodness.
all year.
Okay, ever. Kahil Al-Zabar, and great to have you.
Thank you so much.
Upright Chicago, Wednesday night. It gets kicked off at the Aon Grand Ballroom. We'll link you up with tickets and information in just a second. It's 9:32. More in a moment on 720 WGN.
The Steve Cochran Show.
We're going to break in here. There's a breaking story going on out of, is this New York, Tommy?
Yes, it is. Spectacular pictures coming out of New York City right now of what looks like, and we're getting initial reports, that it looks like a plane crashed into one of the towers of the World Trade Center.
And very slow day for you, I'm told. Here's WTN.
Mary, can I interrupt you? We have to get back to the situation in New York. It now looks like the other tower has been hit, Midway and O'Hare. In fact, all the airports in the Chicago area have been shut down. Now there is also a report that they're going to shut down the entire air traffic system across the country, closing all the airports as a precaution.
And the world would never be the same. I was doing the afternoon show here then, or the midday show, as I mentioned earlier, and I remember... It still felt like, well, maybe this is an accident. Maybe this is some crazy coincidence where both towers could be hit. But then when the Pentagon was hit, mm-hmm. all bets were off.
And I'll never forget Tom Peterson saying in the newsroom that morning after the plane crash in Shanksville, Pennsylvania, Tom said, this is connected. And he said, I bet somebody on that plane tried to be a hero.
For 93? For Flight 93?
Yes, for Flight 93. And at that point, we said, oh, no. It's probably, I mean... At that point, you're thinking, you can't have four planes being hijacked by terrorists.
I remember vividly, because technology is so different now, right? But you remember vividly, and it was Peter Jennings in particular, the great ABC anchor, not a terrific guy, but a great anchor. But the great anchor who I think he had a sweater change for the entire day. Right. But they showed the graphic of all the planes in the air traffic control system, and then they showed it going blank mm-hmm. because all the planes had landed. And now there's that Broadway play, right? Where because so many of them were diverted in Nova Scotia, in this mm-hmm. tiny town in Nova Scotia.
My uncle was flying.
Anyway, memories of 9/11.
My uncle was flying on that day, and he said they made an announcement. They had taken off. It was actually on an earlier flight going to Vegas, and they made the announcement. They said, we need to land the plane. Within 15 minutes, probably less, the plane was on the ground in Peoria at a very small airport.
Yeah,
in Peoria.
Everybody talked about that, the rapid descent from wherever they were at.
Right.
Elise Labatt, the pride of Madison, Wisconsin, and CNN International Global Affairs correspondent, joins us now. And if I remember right, didn't you join CNN just like a year before that?
I did, Steve. I was in 2000, so in April 2000. So in 2001, you know, I was running late that day and kind of walked into the State Department as everyone was, it's kind of evacuating, and the young fool that I was at the time, I kind of ran into the building. But they also had an evacuation at the State Department because they thought, you know, all of the federal buildings were under assault.
It's really amazing, and it's incredible to think it's been 16 years. Of course, in 16 years, you've traveled the globe, you've talked to everybody. And, you know, I'm a fan of your work, and I know you have this Nikki Haley piece that's coming up. You know, if there's breakout stars of whatever mess this Trump administration is, she's got to be one of them, doesn't she?
Oh, well, yes. I mean, look, I mean, she's walking a very delicate balance because if you remember, she was one of President Trump's fiercest critics
right.
during the 2016 campaign. She supported Marco Rubio, and then when he dropped out, she supported Ted Cruz. So she was really an unlikely choice. And, you know, a lot of the things that she says and does seem to be more kind of traditional Republican, you know, mainstream conservative orthodoxy ideology, if you will, as opposed to the kind of populist America first type of sentiment that President Trump has espoused. But she has really been able to kind of walk that line and thread that needle between defending President Trump and being loyal to his policies, but speaking truth to power and really coming out with, you know, being one of the lone voice of human rights in the administration. And really, you know, as you said, she's kind of become a little bit of a rock star.
And Elise Labatt's sit down with Nikki Haley is on State, which has been up for past few days. That's the digital magazine from CNN Politics.
It's up and posted there, and you can see it. She does a nice job of being able to walk the line between not trashing the boss, even though when you can see the internal roll of the eyes because he said something one more time that they all have to go out and answer questions about.
That's right. That's right. I mean, but, you know, she has, again, she's found this really interesting way of not disparaging the president, but saying something kind of totally different and explaining it in a way that this is an America first type of thing. And sometimes, you know, look, when they were talking about the election, the meddling by the Russians in the 2016 election, President Trump has been reluctant to you know, finger Russia, even though the intelligence agencies have all said that they believe it's Russia. You know, Nikki Haley has come out and said, you know, everybody thinks it's Russia. Of course they think it's Russia. President Trump thinks it's Russia. So, I mean, it's really been amazing how when he, you know, veers right, she veers left, but you know, never makes it look as if she's disparaging the president.
You've talked to everybody. You know, we're talking to Elise Labatt. I refer to her as the Pride of Madison because you grew up there, didn't you?
I grew up in New Jersey, but I went to school in Madison, Wisconsin.
Ah, I had it flipped.
At the University of Madison. And Chicago, my roommate was from Chicago, and so we spent a lot of time there. And it's really, over the years, you know, I stayed close with her and her family, and it's really become one of my favorite cities. I visit a lot.
Yeah, even though you go all around the world, you have your sensibilities to understand we're number one.
Well, you know, look, nothing beats the spring and summer in Chicago.
Yeah.
Walking along Lake Michigan. My friend lived in Lincoln Park, so I spent a lot of time there. I'm a big friend of the backflipping polar bear, so you can travel around the world, but you know, Chicago really is close to my heart.
Well, you're always welcome to come back, and you know, you can stay with us. In the meantime, bye. You've talked to everybody. I mean, from Shimon Peres to President Erdogan from Turkey to Benazir Bhutto, the late former leader of Pakistan. I mean, just about everybody. Who's the get you haven't gotten yet?
Well, you know, closer to home, the get I haven't gotten is Rex Tillerson, the Secretary of State, because he's been, you know, very quiet, really, you know, keeping a very unusually low profile in terms of public diplomacy. You know, I interviewed Secretary of State Kerry, Secretary of State Clinton, Condi Rice, Colin Powell, Madeleine Albright. They were all really the face of America, and they went out and they spoke, you know, and did interviews and such. So isn't it amazing that the get I haven't gotten right now is Rex Tillerson? And that's why I think Nikki Haley, you know, to kind of bring it full circle, has done so well, because she's really filled this vacuum that that Rex Tillerson has really kind of seeded the ground in terms of, you know, the other day I was in an event with Nikki Haley. She was speaking out about Iran, another thing that you would think the Secretary of State would do. And someone called her the voice of America, which is really extraordinary.
It's amazing to me. And look, nobody would know who Donald Trump is without the media. And for Rex Tillerson, who wasn't a media guy, even when he was running the big oil company, the lack of understanding on the ability to craft your message, argue your message, but at least get your word out there and still be the story. I don't understand when people in Tillerson's position run and hide from great reporters like yourself. It just, there's no upside to them to do that.
Well, I mean, we've been making that case to his people, and I think he's opening up a little bit. I mean, he just comes from a very different perspective that, you know, he, you know, is of the mind that his hard work and his quiet diplomacy is going to rue the day, you know, is going to, you know, save the day. But the unfortunate part is if you don't use the public to kind of help amplify your message, other people are, you know, creating the narrative
right
for you. So a lot of times, if he's not speaking out, the Russians are speaking out. Or, if, you know, he's not speaking out, then someone else in the cabinet who, or in the White House, you know, President, a lot of people in President Trump's inner circle, they call them the Trump loyalists, like they're, you know, against some of the more moderate ideas that Secretary Tillerson is favoring. And so I think, you know, when you're a CEO, yes, you know, it's very, you know, common to be, you know, or it was, I guess, especially in the oil business. I mean, you know, the CEOs of Facebook and Yahoo,
right,
and you know, Twitter and such are not you know, real public faces. But I think in the oil business, you know, he operated in a certain way. And I think, look, he's trying to bring that business model to a lot of things at the State Department, and he's having a little bit of a hard time because, you know, it's much different. And so, you know, we just continue to make the case that when he does go out and he does give his message, he does very well. He's very well-spoken.
Yeah.
It's not as if he's not well-spoken. I think he, you know, is very, and we understand in meetings and such, he's very cogent, he's very sober, and he delivers a clear message. So, you know, we're hoping that eventually, you know, he'll come to the idea that we can be an asset, not a liability. Right now, we're not really traveling with him. He's taking a very small plane with just a few kind of pool journalists. But if he's able to travel with more journalists and get his story out and get people to know him, I think he's going to do much better because I do think a little bit that he's misunderstood.
Yeah, it's like the great Sergeant Holka, the philosopher from Stripes. Lighten up, Francis. This is Lighten Up, Rex.
That you're going to quote Mike Tyson. Hey, Elise, you've mentioned four key females that you've interviewed amongst the hundreds of interviews, mainly male, of course, with world leaders all across the world. The lack of female representation in the cabinet and the administration, how is that viewed by world leaders? I mean, do they look at us as, wow, not a big issue that we haven't had a female president or even a female at that level yet?
I mean, look, you know, Hillary Clinton was kind of wrapped up in so many, you know, issues about why she didn't ultimately make it, you know, to the top office in the land. I mean, I think that when she took the nomination that, you know, around the world, they said, oh, America, you know, it's great that America's, you know, finally ready to consider moving in that direction. Because, look, across the world, you know, from our closest allies in, you know, the UK and Germany to, you know, countries in Latin America and countries in Africa, they've had that female world leader. But I think, you know, Hillary Clinton's candidacy was wrapped up in so many things. And, you know, President Trump was, you know, while he was a candidate, was such a, you know, kind of unusual. It was such an anomaly on how he, you know, rose to office. I think that, you know, there are people that probably think America was not ready for a woman. She came pretty close, so I don't know that, you know, it's possible that her sex played into it in terms of how the media covered her. But, I mean, I don't think it's a very big deal in terms of, you know, the number of the cabinet. Certainly when us journalists look at that cabinet meeting and there's a lot of, you know, dark pinstripe suits of the men in the cabinet, and not a ton of diversity, by the way.
True story.
You know, we do think about it, but I mean, it's interesting that someone like Nikki Haley has become the breakout star, an Indian American woman. And she was, you know, one of the first Indian American to be elected governor. So I think the country has been slow to, you know, we've gotten forward on, you know, hiring women to the governorships, although it's still not a lot. We've moved forward in terms of minorities, but I think we still have a ways to go. And I think that is one thing that world leaders look at us and, you know, for all our military might and all our economic might, this is still a very conservative. And when I say conservative, I mean a small c. I don't mean,
right.
You know, bipartisan.
We're slow learners in welcoming people that don't wear dark suits with gray hair who happen to be men. Elise Labatt, again, Nikki Haley posted to The State, the political magazine, digital side on CNN. Go to CNN.com. It's easy to find right there. And nice to talk to you. I'm a fan, and you're always welcome here.
Thanks for having me. I'd love to come visit you.
Excellent. I hope you do. Elise Labatt, CNN on Twitter. And we're back with Bill and Wendy next.